Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is columnist and Albany bureau chief of the New York Daily News and regular Capital Connectionist, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be here.
We love having you here, Ken. And when things get really hectic, you're the right guy to be here to sort of let us know. So maybe we'll change the name of the show from the Capital Connection to the Ken Lovett Show. That would be good. Okay, so there's an awful lot going on right now. I think Andrew Cuomo is finally getting some real credit for something that he did, which is the sexual assault bill. You want to tell us a little about it?
Yeah, the bill looks to crack down on really what sexual assaults on private colleges. SUNY and CUNY kind of put in a similar measure last year on their own at the urging of the governor. He wanted to expand it to the private colleges. It's kind of modeled after what California did, this yes means yes consent. It doesn't go as far as the governor originally wanted, but it's basically designed to let people know and to educate kids that consent is needed throughout the sexual process. And it also deals with how to report and who investigates sexual situations, allegations on a campus. You know, it would let students know they can ask for an outside investigator and not just have the colleges do it. It sets up a special unit within state police to deal with these kinds of crimes on college campuses. You know, it creates a bill of rights for students, and it sets aside $10 million to do it.
Now, the governor obviously has been the prime mover on this. We're told he has children, girl children,
yes.
Women children. And
two are in college. One is on the way to college.
Right. And for once, there doesn't seem to be, well, I'm sure there's always political motivation, but there doesn't seem to be that overriding, calculating sort of thing he's always been accused of.
Well, I think it's a little of both. I think, yes, he has kids in college. I think it is a national issue that's been written about and talked about. You know, on the federal level, we see Senator Kirsten Gillibrand really spearheading an effort, the Enough is Enough campaign similar to this. So I think he jumped on board. He's hoping to get some national attention for this. It also helps him on the left. And, you know, how many times have we sat here and talked about his problems with people on the left? And this is another way he can reach out to women voters, which he's been trying to do for years now. And it's a way to try and appease the left. I don't think this in and of itself will make a dent for him in that area. There's so much hostility toward him from many on the left, but it's certainly another feather in the cap, I guess, you know, that he's going to say to the left, you know, same-sex marriage, gun control, you know, this and several other things.
Fracking. But let's just go back in time here a little bit. When he first came out with his ideas on this, they really piqued people's interest, but at the same time, there were people who, particularly men, frankly, who thought that the thing went way too far, so that the bill has evolved. I think it's a much better bill now than when he first suggested it.
It has evolved. There's an appeals process that the Assembly in particular really pushed for. Assemblywoman Deborah Glick, who heads the Higher Education Committee, they felt that it was geared a little bit too much toward potential victims, which sounds weird to say, but there was no real even in a he said, she said kind of situation, it was geared toward the potential victim. This has an appeals process, so if someone is accused, they can go through and have their due process rights.
Well, I mean, I have to say that from Joseph in the Bible on, there have been cases in which women accuse men of rape and other dastardly acts, and they are, where the individual is not guilty.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's those false accusations that really hurt a lot of women who have been really traumatized and really victimized. And I think a lot of people try and play it off that way. You know, they try to lump everyone together. So this is trying to address a very, you know, is it going to fix things on college campuses? No,
But it might make things better.
It certainly could. And at the very least, it can hurt. It's another effort to try to educate and to crack down and to better investigate. A lot of times colleges have been accused of sweeping this stuff under the rug. And I think what the governor was saying is, you know, and using his words is enough, that, you know, you can't just sweep this stuff under the rug and it should be dealt with appropriately. And in the governor's mind, it should be dealt with by law enforcement, that college police aren't always and administrators are not, you know, adept at dealing with rape situations. So
Ken Lovett of the Daily News, let me go from there to what everybody's talking about. Everybody's locking their doors at night, getting their revolvers out, prepping their dogs, because two murderers, that's what they are, murderers, convicted murderers, and very dangerous people have escaped from the Clinton Correctional Facility up near the Canadian border. There's a lot to talk about here. But the first thing is the whole concept of who's getting the blame.
Well, there's enough seemingly to go around. Look, right now the focus is on getting these guys, capturing them. You know, they're at large, they're dangerous, and I think that's where the focus is. And, you know, the governor made himself front and center, you know. He went up there the first day, he climbed through the escape route, he talked to inmates, he was on national TV for a couple of days all over the place. So he made himself front and center, which he is known to do in these. You know, if there's one thing this governor likes, and I'm not saying he's hoping it happens, but his image is based on he handles crisis well. You know, he puts on and he goes in, I'm in charge and we're going to get it and we're going to get it done. In this case, it raised eyebrows because, you know, people were joking that it was like the movie The Fugitive, except, you know, he was going to play the Tommy Lee Jones guy and capture the guys himself.
The other joke I heard was that it was more like a Michael Dukakis moment, with Michael Dukakis in the tank.
Yeah, but what's really more serious, whether or not he's trying to be out there front and center, you know, I think any politician probably would. I have less of a problem with that. But now there are questions about what may have led to these kinds of things. And obviously there's a woman up there who helped. But, you know, questions about how these tools came in and out of the prison, questions about whether staffing and overtime issues played a part. And if staffing and overtime issues are played a part, for instance, the Plattsburgh Press-Republican had reported that there were two guard towers that were unmanned overnight because of pressure to cut back on overtime at the prison. Well, those guard towers overlooked a road where these guys popped out of the sewer and ran off. So if that's real, there's also questions about whether or not the press to cut down overtime. At one point, a couple of days before the escape, there was a melee there. About 40 inmates or more got in a big fight, and they locked down parts of the prison. And there were those pushing to lock down the entire prison so they can search all the cells for different weapons. And they were told no, according to the Plattsburgh Press-Republican and the Times Union. They were told no because of overtime concerns. We can't lock down all the cells. And who knows, maybe if they had and went into one of the cells that these guys were in, they would have maybe found out about the plot. So those are the kinds of questions that are going to have to be answered eventually. I had a column on Monday where the Assembly Corrections Committee chairman, Danny O'Donnell, did not rule out a hearing down the line once these guys are captured and things settle down a little bit, looking into these things. The governor has asked the inspector general to look into it. So, you know, you may see some heads roll down the line. Certainly, you know, the warden there will have to answer questions. And the docs commissioner, the corrections commissioner, the acting commissioner will have to answer questions. And, you know, the closer it gets there, then the governor himself may have to, not so much public, but, you know, the public's going to want to know, you know, did his policies and cutbacks at the state agencies play a role in this?
Well, you know, they've offered quite a reward, what, $100,000 for these guys, and yet they're spending $1 million a day on the search.
At least.
One would have thought that they could do the search one less day and take the $1 million and make that the reward. Maybe you get better results.
Hey, you know, who knows where they are? You know, who knows how long a head start they had? Certainly, you've got, it's a rural area. They could be in the woods. They could be anywhere. They could be in Canada. The governor says they could be in Mexico. I mean, nobody knows where they are. It's really an incredible situation.
It's really quite something. You know, when we talk about criminal justice, here is this prison, but it's up there near the Canadian border. Now, the prison population, and by the way, it was built before the Civil War. That's incredible. But here we are up near the Canadian border. The prison population is, in fact, from New York City, largely. That creates a certain amount of tension when you tell the loved ones and others that they can't really get there. And it's always been a problem, but Cuomo has a big issue upstate New York. There's not enough industry. There are not enough jobs. You get rid of that prison and you put a lot of people out of work.
Well, the governor has closed prisons.
Yes, he has.
And he's closed, you know, he likes to say that he's closed more prisons than any governor in history. Now, what he doesn't say as part of that was his father opened more prisons than any governor in history when he was governor.
And he used to brag about it.
And he used to brag about it. The governor has said, and again, it's also partly he believes it, partly it's also, you know, a message to the left and trying to win them over. He has said that job opportunity shouldn't be based on prisons. You know, it's not a job incentive program, an economic development program. And that's how he's defended closing prisons, especially after the drug law reforms. There's fewer inmates. And their argument against what's going on at Clinton Correctional was that staffing at Clinton Correctional is actually up over 5 years ago, even though there's fewer inmates. So they're rejecting the notion that their policy, surprise, surprise, had anything to do with it. But we'll see whether the inspector general can find it out. You know, she says she'll go wherever it leads. Maybe here's a novel one. Maybe they can create a Moreland Commission to look into this, because in all seriousness, that's what the Moreland Commission was kind of intended to do, look into state agencies and find problems and things like that.
Right. Well, Ken Levitt, that's all very important. To New York people, there is nothing more important if you have an apartment in New York and you're renting it than rent control. It is what we political scientists call salient, meaning it's the thing that will make people vote faster than anything else. While we sit here today, we don't really know what the outcome is on this effort to extend the rent stabilization or rent control laws in New York City. We don't really know, but we suspect there'll be a short-term fix. And let's see if that turns out to be right. Assemblyman Keith Wright, the Democratic chairman from Manhattan, has made that plain. So explain a little bit about, because there are a lot of people listening who don't fully understand what's at stake here.
Well, you know, the rents, and there's about a million apartments, mostly in New York City, some in the suburbs, some even in Buffalo, and in this area, Albany area, that are rent regulated. Basically, they can, you know, rents have to stay a certain amount. Landlords are, you know, there's a whole structure of how they can raise rents, how much they can raise rents. And these laws have been in place for decades, and they expire every few years.
And it's been harder and harder on tenants because, you know, some people are excluded because they're making too much money now and other things.
And a
like
big
that.
Thing, there's three main things that the Democrats would like to see changed in the laws. One is called, and the biggest one, is vacancy decontrol. And what that does is if an apartment has a rent of at least $2,500 a month and it becomes vacant, a landlord can then take that out of the program and charge market value, market rates for it.
For those people who are listening, $2,500 may sound like a lot, but it's not $10,000 or $20,000 a month.
Right. And there's another one where if a landlord fixes up an apartment or fixes up a building, right now they can attach the cost of that, you know, a surcharge onto the rent, and it's permanent. So it's a way of getting more money, you know, through it. And what the Democrats would like to see is, instead of making that permanent, you would have a surcharge, and once the repairs were paid off, the surcharge would go away.
Makes sense.
And there's a whole lot of things like that. There's a 20% right now. Landlords, if a rent controlled apartment become or rent regulated apartment becomes vacant, a landlord could jack up the rent by 20%. Democrats want to get rid of that. The problem is the Senate Republicans don't, and right now they have all the leverage.
So how come they don't?
They get a lot of money from the real estate industry. You know, the developers helped them with a lot of money last year to keep them in power. And it's something that, you know, the landlords don't want to see. Obviously, it ties their hands. Traditionally, and a lot of upstate senators still would like to see the laws phased out. Originally, when they were intended to phase out, you know, when they were first created, what, around World War II. But they've lasted and lasted. The Democrats argue it's the only way you're going to have continued affordable housing, that if you get rid of the rent laws, that you'll lose the middle class and lower class in New York City. Only the rich will be able to afford it. The Republicans say it's the opposite. They say it's a failed experiment, and they believe that, you know, having more apartments available will set the market. Free market will bring down costs, you know.
And so what is the difference here between the progressive mayors, self-styled progressive mayor of New York, Mayor de Blasio, and Governor Cuomo?
Are we doing a two-hour show today? the difference.
Let's see how good you are. Can you do it in a couple of sentences?
On this issue?
Yes.
The difference is, actually, stated differences are not much. I mean, they both are kind of on the same page of wanting to see changes. The governor's kind of been dragged along to it, though. The governor originally had said he'd like to see a modest change to the vacancy. Right now, it says, you know, for vacancy decontrol, it's $2,500 the threshold before a landlord can put it into the open market. The governor had originally said, well, maybe we can put it up to $2,700. And, you know, a lot of Democrats went crazy over that. Now
it should be pointed out the governor gets his fair share of money from the real estate industry, too, for his campaigns, right?
Yeah, so now he's trying to, now he says he favors getting rid of it, although he doesn't think he can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mayor, well, if the mayor had his druthers, what he would prefer, and he said this publicly, is that the state have no say in this. And that the Erstat law, you know, would be repealed, and that the city council and the city would determine, you know, rental and rent policy for the city. But that's not going to happen. They'll never give that up.
You mentioned the Erstat law. There are many people who don't know what it is.
It basically, you know, it gives the state the power to.
State is the state is the chief decider in all of this stuff. And why would the governor give that up to his
or the legislature? Then or
potential
to give it up
rival? Yes, that's right. So in the end, the renters will end up losing here.
Well, it depends. But yeah, in the end, everyone expects the law will be extended, however long it will be extended, and they'll move on. But the argument from a lot of the groups representing the renters is that without getting rid of that vacancy decontrol, you're spelling the slow death. They say tens of thousands of units have come off the rent-regulated system, come out of the rent-regulated system since vacancy decontrol has gone in, and that if you extend it more, you're just going to keep losing and losing and losing until there is no more rent control.
In fact, Ken Levitt of the New York Daily News, I have to say I have two very good friends I sort of grew up with, both of whom were distinguished college professors. And there's also a limit on how much money you can make before your apartment is decontrolled. Both of them quit their jobs as tenured college professors rather than let that apartment on the west side of Manhattan go.
I know, look at that. And now what the Senate Republicans had proposed and what they were really standing hard on is they proposed an 8-year extension, and the law would basically be as is except for two major changes that are vehemently opposed by the Democrats. The Assembly Republicans wanted to require income verification along the lines of what you just said. So they say that if you live upstate or Long Island and you're in the STAR program, you have to prove that the income you make is the income that you make. So they say, why shouldn't renters be required to do that for if they're in the rent regulation? They also want to require that any rent-regulated apartment, that anyone living there, that's their primary residence, that if they're going to benefit from it, they need to live there primarily.
Ken Levitt, you are always the guy who tells us who the inside players are. When the Moreland Act Commission was decommissioned by Governor Cuomo, who said, it's my commission, I can do anything I want with it, the key players who kept getting mentioned, one of whom was Larry Schwartz, his secretary, who took a powder. He went somewhere else, the private sector. Mm-hmm. And now you've broken a story.
Yeah, Larry Schwartz has been nominated by the governor. He's expected to be approved this week to the MTA board, an unpaid position, but a very prestigious position. And interestingly enough, a couple of weeks ago, Larry Schwartz's brother was nominated and confirmed by the Senate to a $174,000 a year judgeship.
Nice work if you can get it.
Pays to have friends in high places.
Yeah. So what can we learn from this is that the governor is loyal to those who are loyal to him?
And yes, and to be fair, you know, the MTA, the Port Authority, you know, the governor's former top aide, Steve Cohn, very respected. He was just appointed, and he should be confirmed this week as well, to the Port Authority Board. And to be fair, this has been going on for ages. Governors have used these boards and these appointing ability to reward friends, donors, you know, certain bodies like the Port Authority are known as patronage dumping grounds. So it didn't start with Andrew Cuomo, but it's certainly not stopping with Andrew Cuomo either.
And one could say, hey, look, if those places have been accused of all kinds of things, it's better to have your own people there, although your own people have been there all along.
And they would argue these are people that we're comfortable with, who we know, who we respect. And, mm-hmm. you know, that would be their argument. That, well, why shouldn't we appoint people? You know, Larry Schwartz served as a secretary to the governor, which is the most powerful position in state governor, short of the governor and state government. And he served under David Paterson and Andrew Cuomo. So if anyone knows government and knows the issues, it would be Larry Schwartz, and that would be their argument.
Do you remember, Ken Lovett, the old rock and roll song, and probably not because you're not old enough, about Rock and Robin and all the little
Sang
Robins.
That in a talent count.
All the little Robins go, preet, preet, preet.
I remember the lyric being a little different, but
it's tweet, tweet, tweet.
Yes.
But everybody is still standing on one foot in the legislature, wondering what the fighting U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara, is going to do. Because remember, he said, you of all people know, he said, stay tuned. And then they came to take away, the head of the New York State Senate. And before that, the head of the New York State Assembly. So are we hearing, what are your contacts telling you? Anybody else on the hot seat?
I haven't heard anything's on fire, but would I be surprised? No. If you're asking me if it's going to touch the governor's office, that's the $64,000 question. You know, we know that Larry Schwartz had been in to talk to them for his role in the Moreland stuff.
That's the same Larry Schwartz you just mentioned as being put by the governor on the MTA board, right?
Yeah, you got that.
Okay. I just want to emphasize it.
No, but whether that comes of anything, you know, no one's been charged. There's no indication that anyone is going to be charged, but certainly it is hanging over everything. You know, in January I did a column and kind of looking ahead to the legislative session, and this is before Shelley Silver, before Skelos got arrested.
Yeah, yeah.
And someone said the two words that's going to hang over everything that is done this legislative session is Preet Bharara. And boy, was that prescient, because, you know, they're afraid to do political horse trading because of Preet Bharara right now. They're afraid to do a lot of things because they're worried about how it will look. Because Preet Bharara has not only just gone after the corruption, but he's also gone after the system. And that's what they're not sure about now, where he's going. So he is, you know, he arrested Shelley Silver for trying to line his own pockets, using his position to line his own pockets. He arrested Skelos for trying to line his son's pockets and using his position to do so. But on top of that, he has commented on political horse trading. He's commented on what was the deal that caused the governor to pull the plug on the Moreland Commission. He's commented on three men in the room, things that don't necessarily strike you as the jurisdiction of a U.S. attorney, but he has. And people are afraid that he's moved the line, that they've always known where the line is, and now they're afraid he's moved the line, and nobody knows where it is, and they're afraid to do what they do.
Yeah. Well, you know, we tend to vilify the legislature, and there, we all know, Ken, you and I both know, that there's some very good people in the legislature. However, I was telling my students the other day, those very good people still have to and do hold up their hands for some of the leaders who are not as good.
Yeah, and, you know, where was, when even with Shelley Silver, you know, he was there 21 years, and there's a lot of controversy, and it's handling the Vito Lopez scandals and all these things, and, you know, nobody said a word, and, you know, they're afraid, because don't forget, the leaders carry an awful lot of power, and they tell you...
Yeah, you want a secretary?
We want a secretary, we want paperclips, what office you have, how much campaign money you're going to get from the Democratic Assembly, and the Senate Republicans, you know, and so they carry all this power. What legislation makes it to the floor? So people are afraid to speak up, and even good people have been silent over the years to this stuff.
Yep. So we're out of time. Our guest has been columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Ken Lovett is just so remarkably well-informed and really does know where those bodies are buried. So, Ken, thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime. Be well.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.